Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and today I'm going to have a lot of fun. I have a lot of great people coming on the show who are going to talk quilting and amazing, fun stuff that's happening, including, did you know that there is a remake of Star Spangled Banner going on right now, the actual full-size quilt? I mean, we're going to hear all about it at the end of the show. So first, I am excited to have Dawn from Linen Closet Quilts. Dawn Hess is just an amazing designer. I love her style of quilting. It's the kind of patterns that I want to personally make. I think they're just gorgeous. She has beautiful colors, and she's written quite a few books. So we're going to have Dawn on now and chat to us a little bit about how she got started. Hey, Dawn, thanks for being on the show.
Hi, Pat. Thanks for asking me.
So how did you get interested in quilt making? What happened to make you start quilting?
Well, I grew up with lots of quilt makers in my family. My grandmother was a quilt maker, and both of my great-grandmothers. And my mom's not a quilt maker, but she's always sewed. So I grew up doing all kinds of sewing and creative things with fabric and fibers. So, you know, it just kind of was natural. I've always been around that.
You know, so did you remember making your first quilt? I mean, can you remember it, or was it just sort of happened?
Well, you know, I really didn't start making quilts. I did a lot of, like, embroidery and things like that, and I didn't make my start really doing much quilting early on. When my grandmother made a quilt, she drew a pattern out on, like, paper stack or cardboard, traced it with a pencil, and cut it out with scissors. So that's what I knew of quilt making. Had no classes or anything. If you want to make a quilt, you just got out scraps of fabric and you made them. And that didn't appeal to me a whole lot. When I was young, it seemed like it would take like a lifetime to do. And so I did a lot of other things. And then I really got started doing a lot of quilt making probably around 98 or 99. I had small kids. And I made a discovery of the rotary cutter and mat. And so that speeded things up. And I was like, oh, my gosh, you know, this is what I've kind of been looking for. And so that's when I really got started. And my first quilt that I really made then was from a magazine. It was actually from American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine. And it was a medallion. And it was used all kinds of blocks and things. And I was hooked by the time I finished with that.
Isn't it funny how often when you get one quilt done, you're hooked?
Oh, yeah, because as you're making that, it just kind of feeds that creativity. And, you know, all these ideas start coming in and, you know, you just want to do more and more.
Now, you love applique. I love applique. It's so freeing. What style of applique do you prefer to use?
Well, I do needle turn applique. Pretty much exclusively because I'm not very good at sitting still. I can't just like sit and watch TV, and I'm not very good at sitting and waiting. So I like to have handwork, and the needle turn is really portable, and I don't have to carry a lot of stuff with me, and I literally work on my projects everywhere. So that's pretty much exclusively what I do. I take that with me everywhere, and I don't like to do a lot of prep work. I'm very impatient, and when I have something, I want to get started right on the sewing. And with the needle turn, I don't have a lot of prep work. You know, I can just trace it, get it on there, pin it on, and I'm ready to get started sewing.
Now, are you drawing on the fabric on the front and then turning under, right?
Yeah, I draw on the front, and I usually use like a Sharpie. I have Sharpies with the, you know, the really fine ones in all different colors. So I use a color that's fairly close to the main fabric color, but yet it's visible so I can see it, and I trace there on the right side, and then I can just turn under that edge right along that line.
You know, Dawn, I never thought of trying to match the color really closely. I just almost always just use black, you know, unless I'm working on a really light fabric, but that makes a lot of sense because then you don't, you know, it's just that variation of it, just enough to see it, right?
Yeah, and like if you're, especially like when you're a newer to the needle turn, then if you don't get that line turned exactly right, it's more likely to kind of blend with your fabric, you know.
Now, I love the fabrics that you use. You have such a beautiful color palette. How do you go about selecting fabrics? You know, what is sort of your mode to get a fabric grouping together?
Well, you'll never see me use white. Oh, I don't like to say never, because when you say never, then that's what happens. But you'll never see me usually use white or really bright, clear colors. I love those, and I see lots of quilts made with those, and those are fabulous, but it's just not the colors that I go to. I tend to work in colors that are a little bit muddier, a little more muted, not necessarily dark, but just kind of toned down. And I usually start, there'll be a fabric that'll just jump out at me, and that will be the fabric that I love. And I'll buy that fabric a lot of times with no idea what I'm going to do. And that goes on the shelf. And so I'm buying fabrics that I love, something that really appeals to me. And then when I get ready to make a quilt, kind of have an idea of what kind of a quilt I'm making. I can pull one of those fabrics and then build from that one fabric. So usually there's one fabric that kind of sets the tone, and then I go from there pulling out, you know, things that will maybe contrast a little bit, and then things that use some of the same colors that are in that main color, kind of keeping in that theme. I like a lot of florals, but I like to offset those florals with stripes and plaids, things like that.
Speaking of plaids, are you finding it harder to find plaids right now? Because, you know, there were periods of time.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like there are that many plaids. There's always going to be florals. And it seems like the plaids have kind of been replaced by maybe the chevrons and the solids and things. Are not seeing nearly as many plaids. And if they are, they seem to be primarily really homespun plaids, not not very many colorful plaids, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I've noticed the same thing. You know, the things ebb and flow, so when you like something, sometimes you just need to collect it up so you have it when the time comes. Now, you also told me you love to mix not only wool with your cottons, but you mix velvet. How do you work with velvet?
Love the velvet. The velvets are kind of newer. The velvets that I'm working with are cotton. So they have a little bit of a rougher feel than what you would normally associate with velvets. You know, velvets tend to be a little bit slicker. And the cotton velvets still have that nap and that plushness, but it's a little bit rougher because it's a cotton. And they've been overdyed, like your wools are overdyed. Mm-hmm. So they're not really shiny, and they tend to have a little bit of variation. You know, like if you're working with a hand-dyed wool, if you've got like a piece that's like a fat quarter, there might be various shades in there. And so the cotton velvets are like that. And they add just a ton of richness and texture to your projects, and they work really well with the velvet. So I'm using those with cottons on cotton backgrounds and with velvets on cotton backgrounds.
But are you also needle? Yeah, are you needle turning them, or are you piecing them in?
I'm doing applique with them, and you needle turn because they do ravel. So what I'm doing is I'm using like a chalk pencil that'll mark pretty clearly, and I mark on the front just like I do with my needle turn, and then I'm using like a size 24 chenille needle, and I use the Aurifil lana thread. The lana wool thread is a 12 weight, so it's sturdy enough to hold that bulky seam allowance under. And then the texture of the lana is kind of fuzzy, and it's got a bit of a texture. It just blends really nicely with that texture of the velvet. And you're not working with little sharp points and tiny pieces.
Have to have something with a little chunkiness to the shape.
Yeah, a little more folk art shapes, and most of my stuff tends to be kind of folk art shapes anyway.
Neat. So tell me about, you have several books. Your books are gorgeous. What's your most current book, Dawn?
My most current book is called Inspired, a 21st Century Take on 19th Century Favorites. So all the quilts in that book are made from designs that were really predominant in the 19th century, ones that you recognize, stuff like Coxcomb and Currants, and there's a quilt in there that features some wreaths, and then all of them have been updated either in more modern fabrics, modern techniques, or maybe kind of a mix of the two.
So you just sort of made them fresher, put your take on it with your colors and everything.
Yeah, and the book is kind of a broad spectrum. It features some piecing, it has applique, there's wool applique, there's needle turn, and there's even a project that does some raw edge applique. So there's a little bit of everything in there.
Neat. I just love it. You know, I love the old quilts.
I love the old quilts too.
Do you actually own any old quilts, Dawn? Do you collect them?
I have some old quilts. I have a collection first of quilts that are about, I think there are about 15 tops. They're not actual quilts, they're tops, and they're feed sacks. They were made from feed sacks, and they were made by my great-grandmother. So she had made these quilts. I never knew her. She was gone before I came along. That kind of, that's really kind of where my love for quilts got started, was with those old quilts. My main interest in quilts in the very beginning was the history of the quilts and the stories of the makers. Because my grandma would get those quilt tops out for me, and we'd lay them out on the floor together and look at all the different pieces and things that she had put together, and she would tell me stories of her. So she became as real to me as the grandmothers I knew, because I had something tangible there of hers, you know. And so that's my real love, are the old quilts. And I have all of those, and then I have a few others. I don't have a huge collection. I can't really afford to buy a lot of the ones that I would like to buy.
I know how that is. It's like that. My budget's very tiny for antique quilts.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, Dawn, this has been so fabulous to have you on the show. Thank you so much.
Oh, thanks for having me, Pat. It's been great.
So I want everybody to visit Dawn at, I'm going to spell it out. It's Dawn, H-E-E-S-E quilts. blogspot.com. You can go visit her and find out what she's doing. We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we have another guest.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 million pillowcase challenge. We're counting on you.
Quilting tips and instructions for web-exclusive projects free every week, delivered to your inbox. Sign up today for your free weekly e-newsletter at allpeoplequilt.com.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. I have got Alyssa Haight Carlton on to the show. She is the executive director of the Modern Quilt Guild. She is an author herself of quilt books. Just amazing, amazing. Alyssa is just so awesome. She's got new things going on with the Modern Quilt Guild, and I thought it'd be really exciting to have her come on and tell us a little bit about the changes and the new opportunities and the new things that are happening with this guild. And, you know, maybe a little bit about Sisters Oregon that she was just at. Also, that show is quite fantastic. So hi, Alyssa, how are you?
I'm doing well. Hi, Kat. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm great. You know, I am just so excited about the new things that the Modern Quilt Guild is doing. Tell me, the Modern Quilt Guild really is one of the very few guilds that is, it's worldwide. It encompasses quilters across the whole world, right?
Exactly. Yeah. You know, it really started, we first came to be in 2009, and it really started because modern quilters were already talking to each other online, and we wanted to start meeting in person. So yeah. That just sort of organically happened really quickly, and now we, just as of July, have actually launched formalized membership. So that's a big step for us.
I think that is. You know, it's a fantastic step. My own little community of quilters here, which isn't little, but we have like 12 chapters under a big umbrella group. So it operates a little bit like what you're going towards. Each chapter runs its own things, but then supports the main chapter. And that sounds
exactly.
like, yeah, it's kind of the structure. So tell me a little bit about what you've put in place and what's available now.
Yeah, so there's kind of two ways to join. It's both that Modern Quilt Guilds, the actual existing guilds, will be joining the organization formally, but then also individuals can join as well for people who perhaps don't have a Modern Quilt Guild close to them to join. This way they can really still be a part of things, even if they don't meet with a local chapter regularly. So yeah, we're offering lots of stuff, you know, access to our fabric challenges, we launched a whole big new online portion where we have a whole community section that all the members can talk with each other. Different guilds will be able to plan swaps, you know, we launched a big website. So that's been really exciting too.
And the website's themodernquiltguild.com. So people can go there. Now, I do want to know, tell me a little bit more about the membership part. Because of it being new and because the chapters people have been in chapters, some chapters are registering, some of them might be consolidating and going together to register. But people, like you said, who don't have any place, how would they get involved? They just go to the website and pay some dues?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. You can take a peek right there on the website, just on the join link. It lists all the benefits of joining and how to do it really easily as well. Yeah.
Okay. Fabulous. So it's all listed there. Tell me about some of these new events. You hosted the first quilt show earlier this year at QuiltCon, and I was able to be there. It was so great. You did such a fantastic job, you and the board.
Oh. Thank you so much. That's so nice of you. That means a lot coming from you. Yeah, we put on our first event, QuiltCon. And so now we're also launching these smaller scale sort of weekend getaways. We're calling them the Sewdowns. Mm-hmm. And the first one is happening here at the beginning of September, coming up quickly in Philadelphia. And there's actually still space there if people are interested. Again, all that's how to find the details about it is on our website under events. So, yeah, but those are much smaller scale, 80 attendees, 4 teachers, really more of a sort of intimate getaway kind of feel compared to QuiltCon, which was really a big, huge convention. Yeah.
So at the Sewdowns, will there be vendors and quilt displays or just teaching?
Just teaching. Like I said, more of an intimate thing. Not a whole quilt show, not a whole vendor hall. Teaching, you know, small classes of 20 students at the most, so that, you know, it can really be a fun weekend of sewing and learning. You know, go with your friends.
Yeah, and you've picked some really beautiful locations that are really do feel like you are going away and getting a mini vacation with your girlfriends. What was your thought on like the locations that you picked?
You know, we wanted to pick cities that are, first of all, spread out all over the country, but also that don't necessarily already have sewing events. With the focus being modern quilting and sewing, I should say. But we picked Philadelphia, Portland, Minneapolis, Nashville, and Scottsdale, Arizona. So really trying to get a broad geographical reach there.
And that's really great too, because people might bring some family who, you know, maybe want to go do something else. So cities all provide other opportunities.
Exactly. Yeah. We hope that people will, you know, squeeze in a nice family visit and then also mm-hmm. get some sewing in.
Right. Get some sewing in. What kind of
always,
things?
Always the primary motivation. Right?
That's right.
Getting
yes. Go
in.
And sew. So, Alisa, what do you see as some of the things that are coming up in different chapters? You know, because you're on the board and with all this new changes, have some of the chapters said, oh, we're going to start having teachers, or we're going to do our own, you know, this or that? What kind of things are you seeing pop up?
Yeah. You know, I think lots of stuff like that is going to develop as we formalize, because, you know, part of what's so great about us formalizing is that now we're really going to have the ability to provide a lot of support for stuff like that. Small guilds will be able to have, you know, a lot of help connecting with bigger names, you know, mm-hmm. just different ideas of things to do with their guild, places to go, sewing challenges, teachers to have, all that kind of stuff that takes so much legwork to do just on your own. Now is really going to, everyone's going to be able to work together, really communicate really easily and well on the new website, and just keep getting bigger and better.
Right. And will you have places for the, you know, each of the local chapters, you know, physical chapters, have officers? You know, you need people to run a guild. Anybody who's in a guild now pretty much knows that. It has to have somebody. Will
yeah.
those people have places to sort of share ideas on your online site?
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Leaders okay. are all going to be able to talk to each other. You know, another really great benefit is that all the guilds that join us will be able to have 501c3 status through a group exemption with us. Mm-hmm. So all those details, that's the legwork the officers do, right? So
right.
all those details of bylaws and EIN and all the legwork that can be tough to accomplish, all that mm-hmm. stuff is really going to pay off, and people will be able to take advantage of being, you know, of having nonprofit status. And that's in addition to the whole community part of it, just being able to all interact and get to know each other better. And, you know, I know that swaps and interactions will all develop one-on-one through members, mm-hmm. but also guild to guild. That I'm really excited to see as well. The
yeah, I think it's
doing things together.
I like this whole concept of being able to have some support like that, because officers change frequently. I mean, I teach at guilds
yeah.
a lot, and so by the time the first yeah. people contact you and you actually get there to visit them, they've gone through, you know, several different, you know, contact people, and the, you know, notes are lost. They don't have anybody to ask questions of. This is going to be such a great resource for the guilds to get
yeah,
help.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely, so, the truth. That's definitely true.
I'm excited. The board has worked really hard. That's a big, huge job you guys are doing.
Yeah, thanks so much. We're really excited as well, you know, and we already have almost 1,500 members, so it's gone really, really well.
So let's switch gears just a little bit, because I was saw that you went out to Sisters Oregon and you were teaching and you were there doing all kinds of things. Tell me about that. Was it fabulous?
Oh, it was. I don't know if you've been before, but I mean, first of all, just the location. It is so beautiful up there. The summertime, hot and gorgeous, and it was so nice living in L.A. I was able to spend some time in a tiny little town for a week. So, yeah, and teaching up there was wonderful. You know, Valerie and Jean Wells put on such an amazing event. Teaching was fantastic. And then the quilt show itself. Have you been?
No, I have not been. My mother, who doesn't even quilt, has been. But
oh, well, you should put it on your list for someday.
I know.
I mean, it is just wonderful. Yeah, this town just transforms, gets covered in quilts and filled with quilt lovers. It was really fantastic.
And so where do you end up staying? Because it is a small town and all of a sudden explodes with, you know, 8 million quilters, where do you all stay?
You know, I was lucky enough that the show put the teachers in the local Best Western, which was really nice. Llamas right there on site. It was fantastic.
Ah.
And so, I mean, I don't know. They must, we were lucky, I guess. They must book us far enough in advance that we get mm-hmm. the hotel rooms in, I don't know where everybody stays, but they manage it every year. You know, it's fantastic.
Yeah, I think it sounds like such a great deal of fun, and just the camaraderie must be amazing. Did you have nice size classes?
I did. Yeah, my classes were full and filled with really excited and great students. I had so much fun.
Neat. Oh, Lisa, this is just so fantastic. What are you personally doing? We have 30 seconds. What are you up to in your quilting life?
Oh, you know, for me, most of my time is taken up with the guild work. So that's really my primary focus. But then, I'm always still designing and making quilts as much as I can behind the scenes, you know. That's why we all got started, right? The actual making of quilts.
That's right. I know. It's like it can easily be forgotten when you get involved with, boards and
all the other stuff. Yeah.
Right. Building big things. I want to tell people your website, which is handmade by Alisa, A-L-I-S-S-A, .com.
Yep. That's my blog, and which I keep up with as much as I have time to these days.
And I know you're busy. So to everybody, thank you for all the hard work. And it's been great talking to you.
Likewise. Thanks so much for having me.
This is Pat Sloan with American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. We'll be right back after the break.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by Baby Lock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. It's Pat Sloan here again. I'm still here. Dawn Stewart is the designer I'm going to have on next. And Dawn has been a friend of mine for a long time. She's with Springwater Design Studio. She's got lots of patterns out. She's very active with her blog. And I just thought it'd be really fun to have her on to tell us what she's been up to and what she's working on. And plus, Dawn is staying with me for the last segment when we talk about remaking the Star Spangled Banner, which she is involved with, and how I found out about the project. So welcome to the show, Dawn.
Hi, Pat.
How are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
I am wonderful. Would you tell me first, just give me a little backstory on how you got involved in quilt making?
Well, for years, I was a stay-at-home mom and did those baby quilts when my kids were little. And while the kids played, I watched TV, and they watched Sesame Street, and I'd sit and make fabric for my scraps and just sew things, and did lots of little projects and small quilts for craft shows and local consignment shops and gifts, and just kind of did that for years. Then at one point, my daughter, fast forward, was graduating high school, and in 2003, and I decided I was going to make her a graduation quilt. And my old Kenmore sewing machine broke down that I'd sewn on for years. It died halfway through. So I decided it was time to get me a Bernina. So I got my new machine and finished the quilt. But then I realized I had looming college payments and a new machine to pay for. So I set out looking for work doing sewing on the machine and wanted it to pay for itself. So I went to a local mill we have. It's a historic site, and they have all kinds of unique shops in it. And at the time I went to see if there's anybody that wanted my sewing done, there was happened to be a quilt shop opening up. So I just happened upon the new owner. She had no employees yet and basically hired me on the spot to do some sample making for her and then asked me if I would teach beginner quilting. So I thought about it for about a half a minute and said, yeah. So then I proceeded to go home and watch a whole lot of Alex Anderson and Simply Quilts and figure out how to take all the knowledge I'd gotten over the years and actually demonstrate it and teach it to others. So,
that's
how it all started.
Just say yes, right, Dawn? That's like
exactly. Whatever comes your way. Exactly.
Oh, my goodness. So did you enjoy teaching beginning quilters? Did you, after you figured out how, did you enjoy it?
Yeah, yeah. We started out with a nice sampler quilt, so along the way they learned different skills, so it was easy for me to teach. There was like a curriculum already for that one. Teaching beginners is my favorite thing. So I love the energy you get. When a new quilter, when the light bulb goes on for a new quilter and they become passionate about the craft, and it helps to keep me fresh. That's why I like to work with beginners.
Yeah. Do you find, I know you're not teaching beginners right now then?
Not right now. I did that for the quilt shop for years. I do a little teaching at local guilds and local shops, but I've been so busy designing. I haven't done a whole lot of teaching in the last year or so.
When you were doing the teaching, did you find that a lot of the people had sewn before, or were they actually new to sewing as well?
We got a lot of new sewers. And I think about the time I was working at the shop, the modern quilt movement was just starting, and people were reading blogs, and we were starting to see some younger girls come into quilting, and that's kind of exciting too.
It's always
a whole lot of new sewers.
Interesting to see the evolution of it, where, you know, when I first started teaching beginners, they knew how to sew. And then, you know, eventually now, I mean, I get people coming to classes, like all they've ever sewn were quilts. They never made or took any other sewing but quilting.
We had gals coming in the shop wanting to take a quilt class and then asking us where to go buy a sewing machine. You know?
Right.
We didn't even have a machine yet. So.
Yeah. So what do you think is a big tip for someone who wants to teach someone to quilt, you know, teach a beginner, whether in a class format or just teach a neighbor or somebody at the church? What would be a good way to start?
I think staying away from like strict, hard and fast rules, that tends to scare away new quilters. There are definite things that I share for safety, of course, and tips to help the quilt come together accurately, because I'm all about accuracy. But it can be accomplished in many different ways, and people learn differently. So I like to keep it casual and offer different options for doing things. I think we all quilt for enjoyment, so I like to keep it relaxing and fun and keep the quilt police away.
Yeah. Right, right. Yeah, I think that that's a really important thing, to keep it relaxing and fun so they can and you do easy.
I think it's scary, like, if they're so worried about messing up and doing it the wrong way. It's more fun to just get them in there and get them playing with fabric.
Now, you're one of the contributors to Moda Bake Shop, and Moda is a sponsor of the American Patchwork and Quilting radio show. So tell me about your quilt, Sleepy Jeans crib quilt, that's at the Moda Bake Shop, because that looks like something you could teach a beginner.
It is. It's very quick and easy to do. Basically, it just uses one charm pack and some coordinating yardage for the border. And you just piece the charms together in rows set 4x4. And then very bravely, you slash with a rotary cutter diagonally across the quilt a couple times and piece in some sashing strips. So it has little room for play and being a little free form if you want to. And then you add the borders on. It's real quick and easy to do. So not a whole lot of worrying about matching up seams and things like that.
Yeah, I think that that's why when I looked at that, I thought, oh, this is something definitely easy to start with. Plus, your squares are cut out if you've got a charm
pack. Right, exactly, exactly. So you jump right into sewing, exactly.
That's right. Another design that you shared with us, and I put a link on my blog to it, is your Star Runner that you did for the fabric quilt company for their blog. That looks like another, mm-hmm. Nice project that you can sort of whip up quickly, or it's a topper, actually. It's a wider than a runner. Describe what that project is.
That project I got involved with because I do a little contract work for Fabric Quilt Fabrics and also Quilting Treasures, where I design some of their free project sheets that you can download from their websites. And I'm currently using the blue and whites that you see in that quilt. Fabric is Fabric Quilt's Indigo Blues fabric line, and I did a quilt using that, and it's in the current issue of, the July-August issue of Fonz and Porter's Love of Quilting. So Fabric Quilt then contacted me to ask me to do a tutorial of a little red, white, and blue thing for July. So I wanted to pair the Roses of Red fabric line with the Indigo Blues that I'd already been working with, and they're all pretty traditional style fabrics. So I gave it a little design twist by using the modern-looking wonky stars and came up with a happy little Celebrate Summer table topper. So it's real quick and easy to do, and, again, very free-formed. You don't have to worry about matching seams and can kick that one out in an afternoon and just have fun with it.
Yeah, I think it's adorable and very easy and nice for summertime.
Anytime you add those little wonky stars, it makes it fun. So
yeah, they just have all different various points and everything. So you're working with a lot of fabric companies, doing a lot of designing. And you told me that your daughter is now working with you. Is she working with you full-time or part-time?
Not full-time, and she's actually doing a little less right now than she was because mm-hmm. she went back and got her master's degree and got a full-time job, and now she's getting married on Saturday, so she's a little busy right now. But, she started working with me, I guess in 2009, after mm-hmm. meeting an editor at Quilt Market. I was starting to do the magazine work, and mm-hmm. I didn't have any kind of web presence at all or anything like that, a website or anything. So Heather had graduated college and moved back home for a bit, so she was handy for me. So she got my blog up and running and taught me how to do a little bit of the tech work, and I've learned along the way how to do some of the website stuff and all. So, and she's a quilter. She made her first quilt on her own in college. So she sews for me, and she likes needlework, cross-stitch, and punch needle. So she's mm-hmm. made several little punch needle samples for me that I designed, and she did the samples. So we collaborated, and they went in Create and Decorate magazine. So she's been busy for several years now with me off and on. My other daughter, Lisa, also works with me a bit. She's a mother of two and also has a full-time job, but she's made some things for my Etsy shop and worked craft shows with me and done some samples too. And her two little girls inspire some of our projects, like my Abby's Owl quilt was made for the littlest one. So both of them help with a lot of planning and coming up with ideas and stuff like that.
So how does that work?
So we have fun.
Yeah, does it work good having your kids work with you in the business?
It does. It does. I need the support. I mean, I like a little encouragement or tell me if I'm going in the right direction with this, and mm-hmm. they give me that. In spring, I also started vending at some local quilt shows, and all of the family came out and helped with that. My son and my husband helped with setup, and my husband Bob is the tech guy for Handy Quilter Machines that we also sell. And mm-hmm. I have two good friends, Starlin and Mary, that do a lot of sewing pattern testing for me and help out at shows. So so I get a lot of help, all the way around. And now during the day, I'm watching the two little granddaughters, and they think they're my little assistants. So I'm sure I'll put them to work one day, too.
You guys are training them right, Dawn. So get them
up. Exactly.
So when did you start are you using a long arm, the Handy Quilter long arm that's on a frame, or are you working on a table, the Sweet 16 on the table?
I have both. Okay. I have the Sweet 16 sit-down machine, and I started mm-hmm. with that one. Liked it so much. And we did Handy Quilter at the quilt shop where I worked, and my mm-hmm. husband was the tech guy back then mm-hmm. for them. Mm-hmm. And then the shop went out of business. So I purchased my Sweet 16 and was using it for myself and loved it so much I talked to the company about becoming a rep. So now I have the Sweet 16 and I have an Avanti on the frame. So I work on both of them.
And are these are at your home? Yeah, because your home is is not open to the public. It's
right. I work out of a home studio, and I do have small group handy quilter clubs here, and I have people over for training, and people can come and test drive the machines by appointment and things like that.
Very neat. So what kind of a tip would you give people for maybe when they go and test drive a long arm, like on a frame, a stand up? You know, what should they be trying out?
I think just kind of the feel of the machine, how it flows for you. Different people, different sized people, shorter people, taller people, like different sized machines. So getting a feel for how big of a machine you want to get, you know, because you could go with a 16-inch throat space all the way up to 24 or more, depending on the company you go with, and just comparing the different machines. But
so,
definitely test driving.
Yeah, tester, because people will be like, oh, you know, until you feel it, you don't really understand what that motion is, because it's different than pushing fabric under the needle.
It is. It is on the one on the frame. It definitely is. Now, the sit-down machine is pretty close to your, you know, regular domestic machine. It's a little more industrial, but you just have that great space. So that one, there's not a whole lot of learning curve with that one because you're still doing the same technique of moving the fabric.
Yeah, and people can, it's just really getting that extra speed that's an advantage, and the because they're made just to do that, and the space, oh my goodness, yeah, having, you know, unlimited really
frame,
space.
You don't have to worry about, and the one on the frame, you don't have to worry about basting the quilt anymore, and I find even on the sit-down machine, I don't have to baste as much or as closely as I did when I was pin basting to try to roll it up and fit it into my domestic sewing machine.
Ah, so let me, we have like less than a minute, but I want to say we're going to come back. Dawn, you're going to come back after the break, and we're going to talk about remaking the Star Spangled Banner, and the Director of Education, Kristen Schnenning, right, is she's going to come on and talk to us. So how did you get involved, just in 20 seconds? Did they just call you out of the blue?
Well, I'm a member of the Baltimore Applique Society and heard about it through them.
Oh, the Baltimore Applique Society. Okay. So, you know.
Yep. And I've done some work with the Maryland Historical Society already, so.
And they're located in Baltimore, the Maryland Historical Society?
Yes. Downtown Baltimore, yep.
Oh, so exciting. I can't wait till we come back from break. So this is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to the American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine's radio show. I'm Pat Sloan, and we are going to talk the Star Spangled Banner. I'm so excited. I just can't stand it. Kristen Schnenning, it was a director of education at the Maryland Historical Society, is here. She's going to join Dawn and I. So, hi, Kristen. How are you?
Hi, Pat. I'm doing well.
Thank you for coming on.
We're having quite a day here at the Historical Society.
Oh, my gosh. This project.
I'm excited.
I know. I read about it on Dawn on your blog, and I, like, roped Dawn right away, and I'm like, hey, what is this all about? This is fantastic. So it's 200 years since the flag was made? Is that right?
That's right, yeah. It was made in the summer of 1813. By Mary Pickersgill, who was a flag maker here in Baltimore.
And so... tell me who made the original flag. I mean, you have this documented.
Right. Yeah, yes. Mary Pickersgill, she lived in Baltimore. She was an entrepreneur. She was actually a widow. So she was making, you know, the living for her family. It was herself... her daughter Caroline, her mother lived with them for a while, Rebecca Young. We think, all helped to make the flag. And then she also had her nieces, Eliza and Margaret Young, and Grace Wisher, who was an African-American who was living in her household. We think she was either a term slave or an indentured servant or an apprentice of some sort, mm-hmm. Learning to sew and to make flags, learning that trade.
So did she make other flags, or was this her first?
Oh, no. She was a professional flag maker. Baltimore was a very busy port. It was the third largest city in the country at the time, and being such a big port city, the way that ships communicated with each other was through flags. So you would make all different kinds of flags for ships' uses, and then merchants in town would have their own flags. And it was a huge communication system. So she was a very, flag making was a very important business, and she did very well.
So how did you decide that to remake the flag? Did you just wake up in the middle of the night and say, this would be a fun project?
No, I didn't start dreaming about it until we actually started making things. a couple of years ago, we were sitting in a programming meeting. It's the bicentennial of the War of 1812, and that's a real big deal here in Baltimore because of the writing of our national anthem, the Star-Spangled Banner. So we were kind of mobilizing on that pretty early, and we were in a meeting with some folks from the Flag House, and they did a replica of this flag back in the 1960s for the New York World's Fair.
Okay.
And they threw out on the table, oh, well, you know, we did this back then. We might think about doing it again. And then I didn't hear about it for a while, and I went back to them and said, well, you know, are you going to do this project? And, you know, they decided they weren't going to go in that direction. And then I was like, oh, well, I mean, it's such a great project. We have to make it happen. So at that point, I started doing some research and tried to find out about, you know, I got the conservation report from the Smithsonian, from the huge project they did about 10 years ago, and we figured out the kind of fabric we needed. Then I found the company to make the fabric for us, and it kind of rolled on from there.
So you sent out a note to the Baltimore Appliqué Society. Dawn, what did you think when you saw that?
Well, I heard it from Kristen. She's worked with us for a while. We do. We're working on a group of us from the Baltimore Appliqué Society. We've been working on a documentation project where we're documenting and photographing all the antique quilts in the museum's collection. They have a vast collection of antique quilts. So we had already been working with Kristen and had a relationship. And when she mentioned her possibility of doing the flag project, I knew I wanted to be part of it. I lived in Baltimore area all my life. I loved the history, and I just thought the timing of this project with the War of 1812 events and the 200th anniversary of the making of the Star-Spangled Banner has just all come together perfectly.
It just gives me goosebumps. It's, like, so incredibly cool. Kristen, what is the fabric that you're using?
Yeah, the fabric was a real. There were two port parts of this project that I knew I had to figure out before I could actually say that we were going to do it. The first was the fabric because this is a huge flag. It's 30 by 42 feet, which is about two stories tall. It's just a massive flag, and I wanted to be able to fly it. when we had it finished. So we couldn't be too heavy for the flagpole. So the fabric we're using is actually called wool bunting, and it's what most flags are made out of for a very, very long time before we started making them out of nylon. Basically, it's a very loosely woven cloth. It's about 17 threads per inch. And what we did was I found a company up in Red Lion, Pennsylvania, the Family Heirloom Weavers. I was able to give them the specifications for the fabric, and they were able to make it. So it's pretty much what Mary Pickersgill would have used.
Wow.
The difference is being that they made ours on a machine loom. Hers would have been done on a hand loom. But it's just perfect. They did a sample of it, and I actually took it over to the Star Spangled Banner flag house. And in their collection, they have a little bit of the original flag. So they pulled it out of their safe for me, and we compared the original to the one that I had made, and we're looking at it, and we keep, you know, at different angles and going around the desk, and we're like, yeah, that looks good. That looks really good. So it was a good match, and I think it's going to be fantastic.
There's also a time frame involved here. Tell me what the time frame is, and are you going to meet it?
The time frame was approximately 6 weeks, just a little bit over 6 weeks, and that's the same time frame that Mary Pickersgill completed the flag in. We know that she sewed the flag in the months of July and August of 1813. Mm-hmm. So I do think we're going to make it. We are, today's update, we added another long stripe. We finished sewing the short stripes. There's 8 short stripes, and there's 7 long stripes. And we just added the 5th long stripe today, and we started cutting out the stars. So we've the star field, the stars are appliqued on one side, and then you flip it over and you cut out the back, and then they're reverse appliqued. So everything is only one thickness of fabric.
Okay, so Dawn, tell me, I want to tell people on Dawn's blog, it's springwaterdesigns.blogspot.com, on August 4th, 2013, she has photos of the flag in progress. What is, and there's a picture of you stitching, Dawn. Tell me what it's like to stitch this fabric.
Oh, it took a little getting used to because it does have such an open weave. And the applique part of the stars is a little interesting because we're taking quarter-inch stitches. And when you do Baltimore applique, you're used to taking really tiny stitches. But you need to catch so much of the woven fabric. You want to make sure that it has integrity. So we're taking large stitches. So it moves along pretty quickly because of that.
Yeah. So how are you sewing the stripes to each other? Are they overlapped? You're doing this all by hand?
We are doing it all by hand. Yeah. Do you want to talk about that, Dawn? I know you've done it a little bit more than I have.
Oh, sure. They get basted. They get folded over together, the two layers, like a white and a red, and they get basted together. And then a running stitch is done all along one side and basically then flipped over. The stitches then flipped up. It's kind of like a double fold or French seam, some people would call it.
So
on the side of jeans or something. It's got a double seam all along it. And the blue Canton field was also constructed strips just like the red and white stripes. So the blue field's also sewn the same exact way. And if you look closely at it, you'll see the two lines of stitching on blue.
Mm-hmm. So, Kristen, how many people are in this team building the flag?
We have approximately 200 volunteers. I had said there were two things that I knew I needed, and I needed fabric. So once I had fabric, then my second one was I knew I needed stitchers. I needed volunteers, and I specifically needed appliqueers. So the first guild I actually went to was the Applique Society, and once I knew I had people who would sew my stars and know how to do that, then I knew that we could move ahead on the project. So it, 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 an an interesting recruitment process because I, you know, started to gather and see if he will be interested in helping with the project. And, you know, from the beginning when you're just not sure, if, you know, if people are going to, you know, get into it or not. And, you know, it went from the mindset of, I'm not sure I'm going to have enough people to do this in this amount of time period to, oh, my goodness, I have so many people. I've actually had to limit how much each person can sew so that everybody gets a chance.
And I say Kristen and her intern, Sydney, have done a great job of scheduling everybody and keeping everything coordinated. She's coordinating two public days where the public can come in and put stitches on. So it's just so many people involved. And Beverly Schenning and Mimi Dietrich are the two kind of in charge with their boots on the ground, kind of keeping all the project moving along and corralling all of us stitchers. So it's gone really well so far.
Now, where can we learn, Kristen, about, you know, what happens between now and when it's finished and what will happen afterwards? What's the best way for people to keep up with it?
People can keep up with it on our Facebook page, which is MDHS, or Maryland Historical Society. If you just friend us on Facebook, we're updating that regularly. Okay. We're actually also going to be posting items on a blog, some short little videos, and some updates on the project. And then people can follow that. Even after we're finished the construction of it, we're going to be then taking it around a lot of places. So people can see if it's going to come to your area and can keep up with where it travels.
So probably touring will be your next big job with this. People will want to have it visit.
Right. Exactly. And I know that we're going to have it go around the state of Maryland, but we're really also hoping to get it to go nationally. So so hopefully we'll get to go around the country a little bit with this flag and get people to, you know, be able to interact with it and touch it and, you know, do all of that. We're working with the National Park Service trying to put together a plan
That's awesome. Will it actually, you know, when are you going to have it go up a pole first? What day?
Right. We're going to fly it at Fort McHenry during their Star Spangled Weekend. So it's actually going to be Saturday, September 14th, during the Defenders Day commemoration, which is the anniversary of the Battle of Baltimore. It'll be the 199th anniversary this year. Next year will be the bicentennial. Of the writing of the national anthem and the Defenders Day celebration. But it'll be during the evening program, so 6 o'clock. Okay. If anybody is going to be in Baltimore, it's 6 o'clock at Fort McHenry on September 14th. And we're hoping for good weather.
Oh, my goodness. Well, this has been incredible. I thank both of you so much for being here and telling me about it.
Well, thank you for having us.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, sponsored by Moda of Moda Bake Shop and UnitedNotions.com. We'll be back next week with a brand new show.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques.